So, hello everybody. Today we have a very special deep dive cleantech podcast. You already hear that I'm speaking in English and I try to do my best throughout this whole podcast. We have a special guest here who is Bertrand Piccard. He is a famous explorer and adventurer who has done very astonishing activities. One of the recent activities which he has done and which he became famous for is that he traveled around the globe as the first human being on this planet with a balloon. And he also has flown around the globe with a solar-powered airplane. Bertrand Piccard is coming from a very interesting family. He has a very interesting family background because already his father and his grandfather, maybe we can learn a bit more about from you about them as well, how they inspired you. They also were adventurers and explorers. While you were, let's say, circling the globe, your father was actually going down the globe, more or less, trying to find the deepest part of the ocean. I think he dived around 11,000 miles down the ocean. And your grandfather, he didn't go down, he didn't go around, he actually went up. So he was the first person on the globe actually to go to the stratosphere with a balloon. And maybe just to start our conversation here, I heard this, I thought, very interesting fact that the captain of Enterprise, Jean Picard of Star Trek, this figure was actually inspired by your grandfather's twin, and that the famous professor Bean Line, this is for the German speakers now, of Tim und Struppi, or I think in English or French it's Tintin, he was inspired by your grandfather as well. So your family actually made it into the fictional world as well, inspiring a lot of people. So you're a truly inspiring person as well. So welcome very much, Bertrand Piccard.
And thank you very much. Hello to everybody.
Hello. Yes. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe we can actually start with this personal background which you have. How much influence your father and your grandfather actually had on your activities?
I was inspired, of course, by their adventures, but also by the purpose of their adventures. The goal was always to improve quality of life, was always to bring something new to the world and to protect the environment. When my grandfather went into the stratosphere 16 kilometers up in the pressurized capsule that he had invented, his goal was to show that it was possible to survive at very high altitude because he was taking his own pressure with him in the capsule, and also that it was possible to fly above the bad weather in thinner air where the air resistance is lower, so you can fly with much less fuel. And in this way, he opened the way to modern aviation. And when my father made the deepest dive ever to the bottom of the Mariana Trench, that was 11 kilometers down, his goal was to show that there was life on the deepest trenches at the period of time where the governments wanted to throw their radioactive and toxical waste down there. And when he saw a fish, that was really the alarm that was rung to say, stop dumping all this stuff down there. It's going to destroy the ocean. Because if you have a fish, what does it mean? It means you have currents from the top of the surface to the bottom and counter currents that make the oxygen circulate. Otherwise, there would be no life down there, the oxygen coming from the surface. So that was the moment where in 1960, where the governments decided to ban the dumping of radioactive waste in the deepest trenches. So for me, it was always the proof that exploration has to bring technology, but also the human values, improve quality of life, protect the environment. And that's everything I try to do also myself.
Jetzt kommt ein kleiner Werbespot.
Aufgepasst! Wusstest du, dass HR-Teams heutzutage mit mehr Aufgaben denn je konfrontiert sind? In der aktuellen Studie HR-Trends, die Zukunft der Personalarbeit 2024 von Sage, wurden HR-Teams aus 7 verschiedenen Ländern und über 20 Branchen befragt, um top aktuelle Insights in der Entwicklung des Personalwesens zu geben. Sage entwickelt HR-Tools und Software für dein Unternehmen, um Lohnabrechnungen, Personalmanagement, Buchhaltung und mehr zu vereinfachen. So, und die Studie von Sage zeigt unter anderem, dass ganze 91% der HR-Teams angeben, dass ihre Arbeitsbelastung im letzten Jahr zugenommen hat, aber gleichzeitig glauben 79% der Befragten, dass Automatisierung ihre Prozesse zukünftig verbessern und Zeit sparen kann. Ebenfalls spielt auch KI eine große Rolle. Derzeit nutzen etwa ein Drittel bereits Chatbots wie ChatGPT in ihren Prozessen. Und ca. 3/4 der PersonalleiterInnen sind sich bereits sicher, dass KI die Arbeitsweise im HR revolutionieren wird. Du merkst, die Studie ist vollgepackt mit Statistiken, überraschenden Erkenntnissen und Tipps für HR-Führungskräfte, die vorankommen wollen, und zeigt eine Momentaufnahme der sich stetig wandelnden Rolle von HR heute. Am besten schaust du dir die Studie HR-Trends, die Zukunft der Personalarbeit 2024 selbst an. Unter digitalkompakt.de/Sage, S-A-G-E, kannst du sie dir komplett kostenlos herunterladen. Und wie immer findest du alle Infos auch auf unserer Sponsorenseite unter digitalkompakt.de/Sponsoren.
Werbung Ende.
So, this is actually a common theme, what your grandfather did, what your father did, and what yourself doing, and we will learn a bit more about it today, is not just explore the boundaries of technologies, but also because of this very visible and very exciting activities they have done and you are doing, you're also creating some awareness and visibility. So you're communicating as well to the rest of the world about your activities. So this really seems to fit very well together.
Yes, because for my father and my grandfather, the technology had to be proven. So they went into their own crafts and they had total faith in technology, and they thought technology can really serve the world. For me, there's an additional factor. It's not only technology, but it's what people do with the technology, how they are aware of it, how they include it into their life. And I want to really bring the proof that the newest technologies today, the most modern technologies, in terms of energy efficiency, in terms of renewable energy, in terms of reducing the waste of natural resources, in terms of circular economy, all this can be the way to make a better world. And also for developing countries, more wealth, social stability, and peace. So Solar Impulse was a demonstrator of it. You know, everybody was saying it's impossible to make a plane that flies perpetually, day and night, with no fuel. And I wanted to show that it was possible.
When I talked to my kids this morning that I would meet you, they had an immediate question and they said, well, did he actually check out when he was flying around the globe how good the world still is? So you're not just proving that with the solar plane, you are actually, you know, proof that technology is able to do good, but have you actually seen on the planet while you were traveling, not just with the solar plane, but also with the balloon, how things have changed, probably to the worse, maybe to the better at some point?
So you see local pollution. When I was flying with Solar Impulse over an oil tanker on the sea, leaving a huge trail of oil behind him, and I was in my solar-powered airplane with no pollution and no noise and no fuel, I was thinking there are two different worlds. There is the world of the present, that is the one with clean technologies, and the world of the past, with all this pollution. But there are even more dramatic situations that you don't see. It's the result of climate change. You don't see the CO2 in the atmosphere, but you see, for example, that the meteorological statistics today are completely erratic. The monsoon in India used to start every year on the same day. Now they can be 1 or 2 months of difference. So when we were preparing the flight around the world with the balloon, it was already quite disbalanced, but with Solar Impulse, it was completely crazy because we could not rely on the statistics.
So you even saw the difference between, I think the balloon ride was in 1999.
Exactly.
And the Solar Impulse flight was in 2015.
15 so and 16, yes.
Within 15, 16 years,
yes.
You have seen this difference.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. This is what we see with climate change. Climate change is not just that we have one more degree in summer in Berlin and we enjoy good weather. It's a complete disturbance of the equilibrium of nature. So even more than a climate change, it's a climate breakdown. Everything becomes unpredictable and exaggerated. If it is dry, it will become more dry. If it is wet, it will become flooded. All these things are destroying the balance of the world. And we really have to wake up about that.
And waking up really means to wake up the planet and the people, because there seems to be a really difficulty or a challenge, because most people just see around themselves right now. They may have a time period of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and it's really challenging to communicate to the people that a change over 20, 30, 40, 50 years is already happening today, and that really means that we need to do something today about it.
Absolutely. You know, California in 2017 had more fire in the woods, more forest destroyed by fire, than between 2000 and 2016. In 1 year, more than 16 years. And 2018 is already worse than 2017. But we could spend the entire interview speaking about all the problems of climate change, and all the people listening to us would be depressed, discouraged, and think there's no hope. So what I want to tell them is that if we do nothing, in 10, 12, 15 years, the quality of life will be destroyed. We'll have tropical diseases in Germany. We'll have floods. We'll have droughts. We'll have millions, millions, dozens of millions of climate refugees flooding over Europe. But if we do something, we can stop this problem. And there are solutions. And it's not wishful thinking. It's not, oh, we will do something later. No. Today, we have solutions everywhere, in startups, in research labs, even in big corporations, that can divide by 2 the emissions of CO2 already now. And this is because our world today is wasting energy by using very old technologies, combustion engines, badly insulated houses, incandescent light bulbs, inefficient heating and cooling systems. So today, it's not a huge change that we need. It's a modernization of our infrastructure.
And even some of the technologies has been there already. I just recently saw pictures from New York of the, I think, 1910s, something like this. There were electric scooters running around the streets.
Absolutely.
And then for some reason they didn't appear anymore on the streets, and all these combustion engines, which was back then something very modern, appeared on the streets. Yes. So a lot of these things, like the photon effect of the solar cells, which Einstein actually got his Nobel Prize, and I think your grandfather was interacting with yes. Einstein as well, what I read. So a lot of these technologies, a lot of these inventions actually has been there already. And what I really like about your message is, it's not just about political objectives, it's not just about environmental, let's say, engagement, which we all need, but we really need to have business models and technologies, and they are all there.
Some of these technologies existed already 50 or 80 years ago, but they were not profitable. So nobody was keen to use them. Today, they have become profitable. The critical mass in terms of production has been achieved. So you can now produce electricity with wind and solar power for 1/3 of the price of making electricity with oil, gas, or coal. So this is a huge change. You can have an electric car for the price of the same car equipped with a gasoline engine. You can insulate your house and have a payback time of your investment in 4 years. You can change so many things. You can produce seawater air conditioning, for example, if you live on the coast. You take the water, you pump water from 900 meters depth, it comes out at 5.5 degrees, and you circulate air through this cold water, and you have your air conditioning. For a hotel in Polynesia, French Polynesia, they have it, and they save 85,000 euros per month of electricity, which means 1 million per year. And it costs 4.5 million to do it, to invest. So in 4.5 years, you have the payback time. So you see that all these things, they are logical. So what we have to do is to push the governments, to push the industry, to really go for these technologies and modernize their systems and their infrastructures.
That's really needed. But one of the challenges I've seen throughout all of these years that you have a certain conservatism in the structure as well itself. So the political system is not really moving as quickly as we both probably would like to see. You have elections coming up, you have legislations which is like 20, 30, 40 years old, which has been built around an industry which was back then, you know, modern, and but it takes so much time to change this legislation as well.
It takes time to change if we don't change.
Absolutely. And I just wanted to come back to this because I think the hope and I think the great proof points which we actually have, also with all the examples which you were just mentioning, are there. There are technologies there. There are business models out there. We just need to have here and there some tweak in the legislation. We need to have the bigger, let's say, corporates as well to join that game as an investor. So where do you see there the biggest challenge and maybe your role as well to change that?
Ten years ago, the politicians were more ready to change than the industry. Today, it's the opposite. The industry has understood that all these solutions are profitable, and they want to use them, to implement them, but they need an equal play field. So we need a regulation that helps to stop the distortion of competitivity between the dirty ones and the clean ones. So what we need are politicians who have a vision. And it's not only for energy and for protection of the environment. Today, what are the politicians doing? They are denying the problems. They are putting the dust under the carpet. They try to make it as smooth as possible during their lifetime as a politician, and they do day-to-day management. What's the result? People are fed up, population are not taken seriously, population feel the problems and see no change, and they start to vote for extreme left or extreme right, for populism. Because even if we don't like the visions of the populist, they have a vision. Even if we don't like their solutions, they are proposing solutions. They have clear messages, so the population is ready to follow them. They are fed up of all the people who don't move and do nothing. Right. So what we need in politics are politicians with visions who explain what we have to achieve, why we have to achieve it, and how we're going to do it. And it would be a fantastic plan for Europe, instead of fighting between countries because of immigration and different views, to set the goal of protecting the environment in Europe, to modernize infrastructures, to use the solutions in the industry. And this can be Eastern Europe and Western Europe. It can be Northern Europe and Southern Europe. It would make a common vision, bring the people together. It would increase job creation. Yes. It would increase profit. It would put Europe's industry on the center of the map again, because now it starts to be really marginal what we are doing in terms of international innovation compared to what happens in China and Asia. So this, I believe, would bring back some hope to the population. But it's not what has been done. And I want to work, and I know you are working for that also, David. We want to show that solutions exist, that they are profitable, that politicians can pull in that direction, because if they make a more modern regulation, if it's a regulation that is more ambitious in terms of energy policy, in terms of environmental targets, it will pull all these innovations to the market because it will create a need. As long as we are allowed to pollute, we will change nothing. But if we are not allowed to pollute anymore, all these profitable innovations will come on the market and will be beneficial for all of us.
And what do you want them to motivate for?
I would like them to modernize the regulation. Today, it is allowed to pollute, to waste energy, to waste natural resources. It's allowed to destroy the earth completely. And this is not normal. So we need to modernize the legal system in order to have much more ambitious and modern regulations for energy, for water, for preservation of the environment and all this. And if you have this tougher regulation, more modern regulation, what will happen? It will pull all the innovations to the market. Because today we push innovation, no? We push with subsidies, with grants and pitches and all that. It's good, but it's not enough. We need to create a necessity to use these solutions on the market. And this can only be done by regulation. And one of these regulations is a carbon tax. Another regulation is to be it's mandatory to be more efficient for buildings, for heatings, for cooling systems, and stop to use all this crap that is 100 years old.
But taking the carbon tax as an example, the challenge seems to be that, I mean, we have 200-something countries around the globe. Some of them work closer together, let's say in the European Union, have a common legislation potentially. But how do you convince all of them actually to go the same path? Because you could still, and I think the aviation industry is a very good example where countries actually tried to implement something like a carbon tax. But if there's a carbon tax in one country making the fuel more expensive, exactly there where you fuel your airplane, but they can easily fuel the airplane in a neighbor country where there is no CO2 tax. So you have a lot of free riders as well and countries trying to optimize around lowering the taxes and attracting businesses, technologies, etc., which is obviously a very short-term view, but this is happening. How
it's easy to answer. Just for the aviation industry, because you took this example, if you want to land in a country that has a carbon tax and transport the fuel from the other country, so you don't need to refuel in the country of the carbon tax and you have enough fuel to go the round trip, the energy you need to transport this additional fuel is much more expensive than to pay the carbon tax at the place where you can refuel. It's completely logic, but the problem is that you have a lot of stupid people in the world who don't understand anything. Sweden was smart. Sweden has not waited for the entire world to have a carbon tax. They introduced it, and it made the industry more competitive. So let's not believe that the carbon tax is something we have to pay additional costs to protect the environment. In this case, all the world has to do it at once, otherwise it doesn't work. Let's see it as a way to stimulate the efficiency and the competitivity of a country, and then people will be desperate to have a carbon tax.
Jetzt kommt ein kleiner Werbespot.
Aufgepasst! Wusstest du, dass HR-Teams heutzutage mit mehr Aufgaben denn je konfrontiert sind? In der aktuellen Studie HR-Trends, die Zukunft der Personalarbeit 2024 von Sage, wurden HR-Teams aus 7 verschiedenen Ländern und über 20 Branchen befragt, um top aktuelle Insights in der Entwicklung des Personalwesens zu geben. Sage entwickelt HR-Tools und Software für dein Unternehmen, um Lohnabrechnungen, Personalmanagement, Buchhaltung und mehr zu vereinfachen. So, und die Studie von Sage zeigt unter anderem, dass ganze 91% der HR-Teams angeben, dass ihre Arbeitsbelastung im letzten Jahr zugenommen hat, aber gleichzeitig glauben 79% der Befragten, dass Automatisierung ihre Prozesse zukünftig verbessern und Zeit sparen kann. Ebenfalls spielt auch KI eine große Rolle. Derzeit nutzen etwa ein Drittel bereits Chatbots wie ChatGPT in ihren Prozessen. Und ca. 3/4 der PersonalleiterInnen sind sich bereits sicher, dass KI die Arbeitsweise im HR revolutionieren wird. Du merkst, die Studie ist vollgepackt mit Statistiken, überraschenden Erkenntnissen und Tipps für HR-Führungskräfte, die vorankommen wollen, und zeigt eine Momentaufnahme der sich stetig wandelnden Rolle von HR heute. Am besten schaust du dir die Studie HR-Trends, die Zukunft der Personalarbeit 2024 selbst an. Unter digitalkompakt.de/Sage, S-A-G-E, kannst du sie dir komplett kostenlos herunterladen. Und wie immer findest du alle Infos auch auf unserer Sponsorenseite unter digitalkompakt.de/Sponsoren.
Werbung Ende.
So one of the most challenging probably politicians in this context is probably the current president of the United States, Mr. Trump. If you had the possibility to talk to him, what would be your pitch, your message to him to convince him? You know his mindset.
That the only way to make America great again is to modernize the infrastructures, invest in renewable energies, clean technologies, energy efficiency that is more profitable, that creates more jobs, and that will make America great again. But I need to see him once I have the 1,000 solutions in the portfolio, because if I see him now and I tell him, I'm going to bring you the proof that you can be more profitable in being cleaner, he will say, okay, come back later. So I can see him only when I have all the 1,000 solutions with the label of profitability. Then it's a powerful argument.
So maybe it takes another 2 years and then he may not be around anymore, so it might be easier to have a conversation with his successor.
Yes, then I will go to see the president of Brazil. He's there for more than 2 years. Yes. And in Brazil, it's very, very clear also what you can do with renewables, how you can be more profitable, how you can absorb unemployment. by increasing the efficiency.
So let's get into this a little bit more in detail, what you are doing right now, because you actually are using all these great contacts, of course, your popularity as well. People know you, people have seen the Solar Impulse flight as well, they got inspired. We just had a breakfast this morning with a lot of clean tech startups here in Berlin, who all got very inspired as well and motivated to do their own solutions. So how do you use this now, this dynamic, and what are you planning now with all of that?
My Solar Impulse Foundation has created the World Alliance for Efficient Solutions. It's a way to federate incubators, accelerators, startups, or big companies who come for free. They just signed a charter for ethical value. It's based on the United Nations Global Compact values. And once they sign it, completely for free, again, they can submit the solutions they have. And we have independent experts who assess the solutions. And if it's proven that it is technologically credible, that the impact is positive for society and for environment, and that it is financially profitable, creating jobs, sustaining the life of the company, even good for in terms of energy saving, for example, on the energy bill of the consumer, then we give the label. It's a Solar Impulse Efficient Solution label. And the first 1,000 solutions that will receive the label will be included in a portfolio that I will bring in the new Round the World trip.
So another Round the World trip.
Exactly, yeah. The Round the World for Solutions, and bring them to heads of states, governments, ministers, parliamentarians, key decision makers, corporate leaders or CEOs, or chairmen.
But you will not fly around with a solar plane.
No, because
again,
you know what? The portfolio of the 1,000 solutions will be too heavy.
Too heavy, right.
I don't want to put it on a USB key.
Yes.
I want to show that it's a massive thing,
right,
with a lot of pages, with a lot of illustrations, really showing what it is. When I put it on the desk of the head of state, I wanted to break the desk, because I want to really have the head of state remember those are heavy solutions. It's not just like anecdotes.
How many solutions have already signed up for that?
Today we have 1,400 companies, mm-hmm, who have signed up. Out of these, we have 600 solutions in the pipeline to be assessed. And out of this, you have so much creativity. It's just absolutely fascinating what all these startups have invented.
Can you give us some examples? What are the most interesting business solutions,
yes,
which you have found?
One of them is called Anti-Smog, from a British company that is called Seagun. It's a little box containing a liquid that you install on the combustion engine of an actual car, a car you have now,
existing car.
And with the energy of the engine, it hydrolyzes the liquid to produce hydrogen, a little bit of hydrogen that goes into the cylinder in the combustion chamber. And it increases the combustion so well that you have 80% less particles emitted, and you save 20% of the fuel. Okay. It's a payback time for a taxi of 6 months.
Great.
So when you see people who believe that the price of gasoline is too high, well, just don't care about the price of gasoline. You can install this thing, and you just save 20% of the gasoline.
And I think this is a good example of that how business solution actually can work without any policy push as well, right?
Because, well, you know, in a way, yes, because it's logical to do it. But what we see is that so many people don't do it because they are lazy. You have people who still have incandescent light bulbs, although they can save half of their energy bill or three quarters of their energy bill with LED lamps, but they just don't do it. So what we would need, for example, is a much tougher regulation in terms of emissions of cars in order to force people to use this system. And when they install it, when they make the effort of installing it, they will be so happy because they will save money. But you have people who are so lazy that they prefer to waste money.
Right. So when are you planning to have all these 1,000 solutions to be certified? And when will you actually start your second world trip?
As soon as possible. Now we have a bottleneck on the experts. Mm-hmm. We have enough solutions coming, mm-hmm, enough startups who are interested in doing it, but we have not enough experts.
Because maybe I can help you.
That would be wonderful. And people who listen to us, if they are experts having more than 5 years of experience, mm-hmm, in water, energy, mobility, construction, industry process, or agriculture. If they have one of these expertise, they are more than welcome to join the pool of experts. We have now 140 experts, but of course, because they work for free, for the good of the world and the future, they do it in addition to their own job, and they cannot do as fast as we would need.
So everybody who's listening, please look at this organization, Solar Impulse, look at the World Alliance initiative.
Absolutely.
You can apply as a startup. You can also join that general effort as a corporate, as an investor as well.
Absolutely.
But as we just heard, we also need experts
yes.
who are helping to evaluate business models, technologies, etc. And so you can drop me an email and I will forward this information to Bertrand Picard and his team. So, I mean, we have a lot of listeners as well who have founded their own startups, who are thinking maybe as well to found their own startups. What is it what you can share from your experience as an explorer, as somebody who really has gone through the desert with some of your activities because things have been failing? How were you able to encourage yourself? So is there anything you would like to share from an inspirational point of view that people actually keep up their word, that they don't give up?
One sentence I told to myself almost every morning, and I told to the team very often, is the following. If it was easy, somebody else would have done it before. And it's really a decision for your life. You can do something easy that everybody has done, or you can be interested in inventing something new. And inventing something new and implementing it and finding the funding for it is not easy at all. I failed sometimes when I flew around the world in a balloon. The two first attempts were failures.
What were your biggest failure back then?
I took off with Breitling Orbiter 1. After a press conference when I said that I was going to fly around the world nonstop in a balloon, Richard Branson had failed, Steve Fossett had failed. I said, I'm going to succeed. It's going to be 2 or 3 weeks nonstop in the jet streams around the world. And after 6 hours, I was in the water of the Mediterranean Sea with a technical failure.
You were in the middle of the Mediterranean Sea, but
yeah.
People were able to track you down.
Yeah, I was rescued. The balloon was destroyed, the capsule full of water, the electronic was damaged, and the envelope of the balloon sunk. So I don't think you can do much better in terms of failure. And I was working with the Breitling watch company. The owner told me the Earth was not made in one day. We probably need more than one attempt to go around it. So we continued together.
But you just mentioned Richard Branson was going to do this, Steve Fossett as well. Was this like a race?
It was a race. It was a race to achieve what was called the last great adventure of the 20th century. It was the last grail of aviation. And at this moment, I had no idea that Solar Impulse could exist. And nobody was thinking about flying around the world in a solar-powered airplane. And when I succeeded in 1999, I saw that the limit was the fuel. I succeeded 45,000 kilometers, 20 days nonstop in the air. And from the 3.7 tons of liquid propane, there was 40 kilos left at the landing. And this is when I said, okay, fuel is the limit. It's not the sky that is the limit. It's the fuel that's the limit. So let's try to fly without fuel. And Solar Impulse was born like that. And in Solar Impulse, there were moments where we were 2 months away from bankruptcy. There's a moment where we broke the wing of the second prototype when we made a load test. Mm-hmm. Well, we just had moments where we knew we were very, very close from failing. And for all the engineers and all the people in the team, and for André Borchberg, my partner, and myself, it was very obvious that it was the proof that we were pioneers. It's the proof that we were explorers, that we were doing something difficult. So it was reinforcing our wish to find a way to succeed. But do it as the wasp and not as the bee. You know, if you have a room with several windows and just one window is open, the wasp will hit the first window that is closed, will fight against it and die, because it will always try the same way. The wasp will try every window and will find the one that is open and will escape. You can do the experience at home. It's really interesting. So we need to be wasp. If you fail each time for the same reason, it's stupid. You have to fail each time for another reason. And when you have explored enough wrong ways, you can find the right way. And for startups, very often it's like this. So we need perseverance and resilience.
And also always the awareness of changing your perspective, of just looking into things differently and try to leave your usual path, which
yes,
you're going.
Absolutely. Right? Like in a balloon. If you want to change your direction in a balloon, you have to change altitude to find another wind that has another direction. And to change altitude, you have to drop ballast. And in life, it's exactly like this. We have to drop our certitudes, our beliefs, our convictions, our dogmas, our paradigms. And when we
But this is not very easy.
This,
how do you get there?
You get there by observing what are your paradigms or your certitudes and your beliefs each time you're taking a decision, each time you're answering to a question or you have something to do, a reaction to produce. And you have to understand that this reaction or this answer is the result of your past, of what you have learned. It's not enough. It will not help you to change. So you have to try something else. You have to observe very honestly what you deeply believe and do something else. And if you do something else, or if you are, let's say, ready to do something else, then you have all the possibilities in front of you. You have what you know, what you don't know. You have what you are sure of, and you have all the uncertainties. And you have your beliefs, and you have all the other ways to see the world and to understand the situation. And when you have all these directions in front of you, then you change altitude and take the one that leads you in the good direction, exactly like in a balloon.
Yeah, so you need to be aware of your objectives. You need to be very clear about your objectives. And you need to be clear about your motivations.
Not only because your motivation, you can be sure about it. The objective, you can be sure about it. But if you have the wrong strategy, you will miss it and you will fail. So you need to see. Normally, with what I have learned, I would do like this. But what are all the other ways of doing? What are all the other ways of thinking? In the balloon, when you take off, you know for each altitude which direction you will have. So you stabilize the balloon at the right altitude to have the right direction. When you're working on a project, you have to do exactly the same. All the different ways of thinking will bring you to different results. Which of them is the one you should follow? So it's a decision. It's an active decision. If you reproduce what you have learned, you will never be an inventor. You'll never be an innovator that is successful. You need to produce something that you have never learned. Never learned. So where does it come from? And you know, this is the magic of creativity. That's the magic of adventure. It's when you understand that inside of yourself, you have so much more than what you have learned. You have your intuition, you have your emotions, you have your creativity, you have more performance. And more than all of that, you have awareness that you're alive in your body, in your life, and that this awareness is a way to produce something new, not just reproduce what you have learned.
Jetzt kommt ein kleiner Werbespot.
Aufgepasst! Wusstest du, dass HR-Teams heutzutage mit mehr Aufgaben denn je konfrontiert sind? In der aktuellen Studie HR-Trends, die Zukunft der Personalarbeit 2024 von Sage, wurden HR-Teams aus 7 verschiedenen Ländern und über 20 Branchen befragt, um top aktuelle Insights in der Entwicklung des Personalwesens zu geben. Sage entwickelt HR-Tools und Software für dein Unternehmen, um Lohnabrechnungen, Personalmanagement, Buchhaltung und mehr zu vereinfachen. So, und die Studie von Sage zeigt unter anderem, dass ganze 91% der HR-Teams angeben, dass ihre Arbeitsbelastung im letzten Jahr zugenommen hat, aber gleichzeitig glauben 79% der Befragten, dass Automatisierung ihre Prozesse zukünftig verbessern und Zeit sparen kann. Ebenfalls spielt auch KI eine große Rolle. Derzeit nutzen etwa ein Drittel bereits Chatbots wie ChatGPT in ihren Prozessen. Und ca. 3/4 der PersonalleiterInnen sind sich bereits sicher, dass KI die Arbeitsweise im HR revolutionieren wird. Du merkst, die Studie ist vollgepackt mit Statistiken, überraschenden Erkenntnissen und Tipps für HR-Führungskräfte, die vorankommen wollen, und zeigt eine Momentaufnahme der sich stetig wandelnden Rolle von HR heute. Am besten schaust du dir die Studie HR-Trends – Die Zukunft der Personalarbeit 2024 selbst an. Unter digitalkompakt.de/Sage, S-A-G-E, kannst du sie dir komplett kostenlos herunterladen. Und wie immer findest du alle Infos auch auf unserer Sponsorenseite unter digitalkompakt.de/Sponsoren.
Werbung Ende.
That's interesting, because looking at your biography as well, you started as a medical doctor. And if I look at around all the sponsors which have supported your Solar Impulse flight, there were not any flight companies or any airplane companies involved in that. So you actually pulled together a team of people who all had, let's say, an external perspective on the things which you were going to do.
There was not a penny given by an aeronautical specialist. It was all the funding coming from chemical companies. In Germany, we had Covestro. You know, the biomaterial science, which became Covestro. We had champagnes, we had telecommunication.
ABB.
We had watches, we had elevators, you know, Schindler, who needs to be efficient in order to have more sales.
How do you actually form a team? And I think at the peak time you had like 150 people working for you to realize that.
150 employees at the same time.
How do you bring all of these people together? Is it the vision you were spreading?
It's the mindset. We're sharing a mindset. It was interesting to see that we did not have mass consumer goods making normal sponsoring. We had companies who, for most of them, they are not making any sponsoring. So they came in this project, in the Solar Impulse project, because they wanted to allow something impossible to become possible. So it was a way to stimulate innovation internally, like for Solvay and Covestro, develop new products that we could use but they could bring on the market. It was a way to show that they were supporting innovation, supporting entrepreneurship, that they were a pioneering company. And I'm really thankful to them. It was fantastic. And, you know, at the end of the fundraising, I think I could see in 5 minutes' time if the person I was talking to
was interested or not,
had a good spirit for that or not.
But how did you maybe, that's something our listeners can learn from as well, how did you actually inspire and get all of these investors? How did you get them motivated in your fundraising? How much money did you fundraise, by the way?
170 million over 15 years.
So what was your secret negotiation skill to get all of this funding?
Never try to convince, try to motivate. Because when you convince somebody or you try to convince him, what do? You try to fight against the part of the other one who would like to say no. And you try to bring more and more arguments, and the more arguments you give, the more resistance you create. What you have to do is to motivate. It means to make an alliance with the part of the other one who would like to say yes. And if you do that, you are not fighting anymore, you're not competing, you're not forcing anything, the other one is not resisting, you're just seeing what you can do together. And sometimes it was obvious that there was nothing to do together. And sometimes, fortunately, there were situations where it was obvious that we had a lot of things to do together, and then it happened. But I never needed to push anybody to do it.
So you really need to know as well the objectives and motivations of your potential investors as well, and then try to get them aligned with your motivations and your objectives.
Absolutely. You have to understand the world of the other one. We tend in our life to believe our vision of the world is better than the others, which is completely wrong. Sometimes it's the others who are much more right, true, performant, or better thinking than we are. So we really have to leave a huge place for the vision of the world of the people to whom we're talking. We have to speak their language. And it's exactly why, with the Solar Impulse Foundation, I decided to take only projects and solutions that are profitable. And we put the label to the profitability because I want to speak the language of the people that can change the world.
And profitability from a today's point of view or from a point of view when, let's say, regulation, etc. is ideally set up?
So we have two categories. One are the solutions that are already profitable today. There is one system, for example, you recover the heat of the water going out of the shower to give it to the water coming to the shower. So you have a closed circuit in order to save hot water and save the energy to heat water. If it is a saving of 1 cent per shower and it's 2,000 euros to install it, you can forget it. Doesn't work. Now, if you save half a euro per shower and it costs 300 euros, then it's worth it. And all the judgment has to be done like this. If it is profitable, people will use it. If it's not profitable, they will not use it.
And I think this is the beauty about your initiative here as well, just showing that you're not just improving the environment, but really you're creating jobs, you're creating value, you're attractive for investors, and really taking this more mainstream to all of those people who may not care that much about the environment or about the future of this planet, as we do. And really taking this mainstream.
Yes, I would like to show that even if there was no climate change, even if there was no pollution, it would make sense to use these 1,000 solutions because it would just increase the GDP, create jobs, but of course, clean GDP. It's not a growth where you have more of everything. It's a growth where you replace the polluting things by the new modern things, which means that you create value, you have more money, you have more profit, but you do not waste all the natural resources of the planet.
You have three daughters, and yes. We will see maybe another generation of explorers and pioneers.
Yes, but maybe not in the field you think. I told them that going for airplanes, balloons or submarines, it has been done in the family. They can do something else.
Yes.
And one is lawyer, the other one is economist working in marketing, and the third one is architect. And in these three fields, they can do a lot in terms of improving quality of life, fighting for more efficiency, for circular economy, building a cleaner constructions and all that. So actually, they are really working in that direction of environment, but through other angles, which pleases me very much.
And this is really something what we need, right?
Yes.
Because it's not just the technology, but changing the legislation, as we have talked about before as well. But we need to change the mindset of the people. We need to do a lot of communication and storytelling at the end of the day to inspire people to go towards this direction. And you said in the beginning that you are full of hope, of course. So if we analyze all the dramatic, let's say, developments globally, which in fact the environment is one of these things globally, which has, let's say, worsened over time. If you take the last 400 or 500 years, everything else, if you take education per person, if you take the health system, if you take poverty, everything on a global scale really has been improved over the last couple of centuries. And
yes,
a lot through working together, through international trade, through, I think, these are the positive sides of globalization as well. They're not just negative sides here as well. But the environment is probably one of these fields which really needs to have a lot more push. And it's great to have somebody like you who's doing this and pushing this. And I think we all should support what you are doing and
support each other.
Support each other.
All the people who are doing something.
Are there any wishes which you have to startups, to investors, to entrepreneurs?
All the startups, all the entrepreneurs who have identified for themselves or for others a profitable solution to protect the environment are more than welcome to submit them to our process completely for free. They can receive the label and be included in the portfolio. All the experts who want to join us in this assessment and evaluation process are more than welcome. So this is my wish, that we also work more with Germany. We have 4 solutions from Germany. Of course, there are much more that exist, so we can improve this. We have, out of 1,400 members, I think we have 60 members from Germany. So we can also improve this. Maybe I'm not enough in Germany, but now we have created this contact, David, and I'm sure that we can work much more together.
Yeah, I mean, as you know, we have put together this Eco-Innovation Alliance, which is an alliance of startups basically still in the German-speaking world. There are even some Swiss companies part of that, but basically based here in Germany right now, who all show that they have clean tech innovations. And the objective of this B2B network, which we are managing here, is really to show politicians that there are solutions out there. They don't need to wait for big corporates to do something. There are great startups. There are great companies as well who got quite attractive fundings. All of these companies, they got attractive investments as well. And so you see as well that the investment community is looking at this sector more and more as well. And so I'm very happy to continue working with you on that. And well, thank you very much for joining us in this podcast here.
With pleasure. Thank you for inviting me, David.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Jetzt kommt ein kleiner Werbespot.
Aufgepasst! Wusstest du, dass HR-Teams heutzutage mit mehr Aufgaben denn je konfrontiert sind? In der aktuellen Studie HR-Trends, die Zukunft der Personalarbeit 2024 von Sage, wurden HR-Teams aus 7 verschiedenen Ländern und über 20 Branchen befragt, um top aktuelle Insights in der Entwicklung des Personalwesens zu geben. Sage entwickelt HR-Tools und Software für dein Unternehmen, um Lohnabrechnungen, Personalmanagement, Buchhaltung und mehr zu vereinfachen. So, und die Studie von Sage zeigt unter anderem, dass ganze 91% der HR-Teams angeben, dass ihre Arbeitsbelastung im letzten Jahr zugenommen hat, aber gleichzeitig glauben 79% der Befragten, dass Automatisierung ihre Prozesse zukünftig verbessern und Zeit sparen kann. Ebenfalls spielt auch KI eine große Rolle. Derzeit nutzen etwa ein Drittel bereits Chatbots wie ChatGPT in ihren Prozessen. Und ca. 3/4 der PersonalleiterInnen sind sich bereits sicher, dass KI die Arbeitsweise im HR revolutionieren wird. Du merkst, die Studie ist vollgepackt mit Statistiken, überraschenden Erkenntnissen und Tipps für HR-Führungskräfte, die vorankommen wollen, und zeigt eine Momentaufnahme der sich stetig wandelnden Rolle von HR heute. Am besten schaust du dir die Studie HR-Trends, die Zukunft der Personalarbeit 2024 selbst an. Unter digitalkompakt.de/Sage, S-A-G-E, kannst du sie dir komplett kostenlos herunterladen. Und wie immer findest du alle Infos auch auf unserer Sponsorenseite unter digitalkompakt.de/Sponsoren.
Werbung Ende.